You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Man, I'm fired up for baseball season.
I've noticed that.
I love baseball, and I'm just ready. I've got optimism I haven't had for the Mariners' youth, and I don't know how long, but somebody who can tell me how long.
The Utes
of this organization. There's optimism. There's reason to be optimistic, and somebody who's dialed into everything going on with this team is our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher, who's with us. Shannon, how are you?
Oh, I'm happy. We're talking baseball. It's about time.
I know. It's right around the corner, and who knows what, you know, spring training will look like. Hopefully things will be getting back to normal sooner rather than later. But just in terms of, before we get into specifics, just the optimism around the youth. I mean, the guys that are up with the big club, the Evan Whites, Crawford, Lewis, you know, all these the young guys that we've seen, you know, Gold Glovers, by the way, Rookie of the Year, and then their organization is in better shape. The minor league system is in better shape than I can remember, and I don't even know how long. When's the last time you felt this level of optimism around the youth, whether it's at the big league level or sitting there in the minors?
I think that as far as quantity goes, never. This is, if you look up and down, some that are up at the big league levels right now, some that are close, and then some that are still a few years away, some draft picks that there are a lot of excitement about. I don't think there has ever been this number of young players, and that's important. That's what they're building around right now. But it was really interesting during the season when they got that first look. Everybody that you ran into, socially distanced, at the ballpark were thrilled about what they were seeing. I think they exceeded expectations for that first look at the big league level. And unfortunately, that was not quite long enough. But then you extend that to what they were able to do at the alternate site and then what they were able to do down in Arizona. And then what some guys were able to do even away from the club, and some guys kind of all of a sudden popping up that were not really on the radar that are all of a sudden a little bit closer, guys like Juan Fenn, who the Mariners traded to Tampa Bay and then got back. And everybody, I think, kind of, who is this guy? Well, big deal, they traded for him. He's a guy that could be, you know, pitching at the big league level within a year. And he's seen his velocity go from 89-90 to upper 90s with good command and a good breaking ball as well. And he's just 21. When you talk to people around the organization, I mean, if you're following the club, you know a lot of these names. If you're covering the club, you know a lot of these names, but I'm still kind of shocked sometimes when I talk to some people within the organization, and then they say, just wait. They're, you know, the obvious names and the high draft picks and your Emerson Hancocks, your George Kirby's and your Logan Gilberts, but the fact of the matter that they see is they're building a lot of pitching. It might not be the biggest and the most obvious names, but they got a system going right now, and as far as sheer bulk of talent, and we know there can be more. If you watch the Padres this year, you saw what they were able to do with their system. But for them to do what they've done in the last 2 years, I think, you know, the talent, there's a good amount there. The processes are in place, and there is a ton of excitement around these young players.
I'm glad to hear that, Shannon. And I saw your article, and one of the quotes from Jerry is that he thinks young teams tend to gel a little bit more quickly. Is just from what you've been able to glean, this team coming together, it sounds like you're very optimistic. Are you guardedly optimistic, or are you just plain optimistic?
Well, I'm trying to be realistic about it. The other side of it is that when you have the number of prospects that you have, the truth of the matter is you never see a full class of prospects make it or turn into what they're supposed to turn into. We've seen quite a bit of the opposite here. This is a different regime. This has been a different training system, a different player development department. I think we will see something different, but you have to give them time. And one of the kind of caveats I had to the whole thing last year, with as exciting as it was to see what they did, to see Kyle Lewis win Rookie of the Year, to see some of the young pitching, Justice Sheffield do what he did, see J.P. Crawford win the Gold Glove, see Evan White make his debut and win the Gold Glove. It's not enough. 60 games, 200 at-bats, 60 innings pitched for a starter, it's not enough. They haven't had enough of the ups and the downs. And I think that you need to see more before you can really have any kind of concept of where they are and what they have and where they might need to add. Right now, they look around the diamond, and Jerry Depoto said this yesterday. He said, they look at it and they either have somebody for every position up at the big league level right now or close, which makes it kind of hard to gauge what need is, because I think they're aware too that it's not going to break the right way with every player. If it did, that'd be the first time that has happened for anybody. But when I look at it, I like what I saw last year. And when he made that comment about sometimes they gel, I don't know if you guys were listening the other day, but Justice Sheffield was on the morning show. And to remember that he doesn't even have a full year in the big leagues. He's got a full 60-game season. That's not a full season. But to hear the way that he was talking, and in that he talked about how they're really excited about the young players that are coming that he's seen in the organization, that he's heard of in the organization. And he said, you know, one of the big things is they're going to just have to put their egos aside and come along, get in line, and move forward with us. And to hear a young player say that, he's not just talking about himself. He's talking about a huge group in that clubhouse. And it's something that struck me the year before. And I remember Evan White came up to accept an award at T-Mobile Park. And he wasn't one of those players that was up in uniform or anything like that. He was just there to accept the award. But the way that the younger players were drawn to him, and there were some that were up for September and up for awards, you already saw that young group together. And I saw him for a couple of days down in Texas when we were there as well. Sometimes, you know, quite often you want that veteran leadership and you want a lot of that. But when you bring up a club together, they kind of have their own leadership. They kind of have their own trust in each other. And they're not just playing for themselves. You really get that feeling. And listening to Justice yesterday morning, you heard that a little bit more. And I think that's a little bit about what Jerry was talking to, that you can kind of take those steps forward a little bit faster if you have that feeling within your clubhouse, if everybody knows you, if you know everybody, if there's a comfortable factor in there. And I think they certainly had that last year.
You know, in talking about this club and my optimism, it's all centered around the position players, because I'm really uncertain when it comes to their rotation, and especially the bullpen, which every year is a grab bag. There's so much turnover in bullpens. You never know. One year they've got the best bullpen in baseball. Next year, all of a sudden, it's towards the bottom. So we'll see what happens with that. But as far as this rotation goes, I mean, you know what you're going to get out of Marco. You love Marco. I love the track that Sheffield is on. I feel good about him. Then the rest is unknown. Kikuchi has not shown me anything. I've seen good innings, and then I see the wheels come off. So I don't know what to expect from him. He's in a prove-it year for me, because I don't buy him yet. And then how do you fill out the rest of this rotation? Are we going to be looking at a six-man rotation? Is it going to be five? And who are those names? Is it going to be Margavicious, Flexen? What's it going to look like, in your opinion?
Okay, Bob, say it with me. Margavicious.
Margavicious. What did I say? Margavicious?
Okay, Dave. Yes, and Dave, you need to say it too.
Margavicious.
I'm the one that screws up names. I do it on purpose. Margavicious, am I right?
Yeah.
Bob, yes, and of course, Scott Service calls him Marge, which I think Marge is completely unacceptable.
Well, we got to have a nickname for this guy.
Yeah, I guess Marge is it. Yeah. All right, so Marge, what does it look like, and what's your level of faith in it? Is it going to be a six-man rotation? What are we looking at?
It's definitely going to be a six-man rotation, and that's a little bit of that's their investment and commitment to this group. When you had nobody in that rotation who threw more than 70 innings last year, they're figuring that the starters are probably, for health's sake, looking at 140 to 150. And if you get them in a six-man rotation, that spreads them out a little bit, takes away a couple of extra starts. But it also gives them a second bullpen day, which Jerry DePoto explained this yesterday, and I love the idea of it. And it's not just go out there and throw your pitches in the bullpen. With what they're doing right now, with the technology that they have, with the information that they have, they can use that second bullpen for more work, such as pitch shaping and more intensive work and going out there and actually working on something. So that will help with the development. When you look at that six-man rotation, I'm with you. I feel good about Marco Gonzalez, Justice Sheffield. I love what we saw from him last year. Kikuchi is frustrating. I think we saw, you know, just some just almost off the charts talent. But again, it was in innings, and the command was an issue. The repeatability of the delivery was an issue. If he can put all of that together, you've got something, especially coming from the left side. But they got to make a decision on that. next year. I thought it was interesting. Hisashi Iwakuma is back with the team as a special assignment coach, and I think that's a fantastic move. Hisashi was a heck of a pitcher. He knew his stuff. He knew how to study. He knew how to pitch. He wasn't a guy that was just going to go out there and fireball. He could keep hitters off balance. I'm looking forward to that. And Jerry said he's going to work great with the young guys. He also mentioned working with Kikuchi. We'll see what happens there. Flexen is very interesting. Chris Flexen coming over from the Korean Baseball League, pitched over 150 innings last year. He'll be one of the only pitchers in Major League Baseball this year to have thrown more than 70, 80 innings. So that should be helpful. Also, by the metrics, really improved a number of his pitches, added some velocity. We'll see what happens there. That's all measurable. They like what they saw. We'll see what it looks like on the field. Then they're leaving open spots 4 or 5 and 6 for competition. Justin Dunn will figure into that competition, and much like Kikuchi, but without the contract and younger, he was up and down. You know, his numbers, if you look across the board, and if you're just looking at ERA and things like that, look good, but he had those disastrous innings. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he walked himself out of trouble, and he's got to get that squared away. So he's going to have to fight for that spot, and this year, AAA is going to be an option if they need to work on anything. Margavich is extremely mature pitcher for his age. I would really like to see more of him. LJ Newsom could fight for a spot. Interestingly enough, and I was surprised by this at the press conference, Jerry DePoto for the first time brought up Logan Gilbert's name as a possibility to compete for a spot out of spring training. And he had a fantastic summer camp, fantastic alternate site, really went to work on things. He's had a year to work on himself. He didn't have the competition, but was able to work on some other things. I'm very interested to see what he looks like in spring training. And then he said there's room to bring somebody else in, and be that a minor league free agent, or perhaps this market will get to a point where something falls to them and you see another addition in the rotation. That would be good as well.
How are you feeling about the bullpen? I mean, they've had some young arms in there. You feel pretty good here and there, but again, it's so up and down, and that's with every team. I'm not just talking Mariners. Bullpen is so interchangeable, it feels like. But are there names in there that you're like, all right, this guy is most likely a starter or starter closer, or it's going to be closer by committee? Is there somebody that's an obvious choice there? How does the bullpen shape up in your eyes?
Well, let's start this way. I feel a heck of a lot better about it than I did last year, and I think that this is important. And they tried to build and give a little bit more help to that pen, and they all got hurt. And one of the things with the bullpen, particularly with a young club, you don't want these guys fighting for wins, trying to learn how to win, and then having the bullpen blow it night in and night out. That is incredibly demoralizing. It's not good for development. And for that reason and other reasons, that was one of the prime goals of Jerry DePoto in this offseason, was to go out and to fix that bullpen. So they've added a lot to the pen. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. If they go back to a 26-man roster, they're only going to be allowed to have 13 pitchers total, and with a 6-man rotation, that's one less in the pen, and they typically like to go with an extra. So they're going to have guys that can pitch in the pen, and that's, you know, day in and day out, and be able to pitch in different situations. And I think that that's kind of how he was building it. When you look at it, if they were to start the season tomorrow, I think Rafael Montero, who came over from Texas and he does have closing experience already, would probably be the closer. I'm interested to see what Kendall Graveman can do on a consistent basis in a full season. If he can do what we saw in some of his appearances out of the pen, he has, you know, just the killer sinker. He has the velocity, more velocity coming out of the pen. That's going to be something. I mean, it might be like adding Blake Treinen without actually having Blake Treinen. He might have already been there. Kenyon Middleton is a guy that is coming off of a surgery and a really kind of tough time in the Angels, some overuse, but he's somebody that DePoto had a lot of experience with. Also is a guy that is going to be one of those higher velocity guys. And this is something that they didn't have last year. They didn't have a ton of velocity. They got a lot more in the pen. Johan Ramirez, they rule fived him last year, can send him to the minors if they need to. He's been pitching in winter ball, which is good, so he has been getting work. You liked what you saw from him when he had his command, another guy with just that electric velocity, but he's got to have the command. So, you know, they've already added quite a bit there. Haven't even really mentioned the guys that were already there. Will Vest, Rule 5 guy, that they really loved his stuff. I think it's going to be tougher to carry a Rule 5 pitcher this year if they're only limited to 7. And then a lot of in-house options, a lot that you saw last year, some that you didn't. Wyatt Mills was a great story. You'll hear about him at some point if you haven't already. But he's kind of a submariner and did not get invited to summer camp and then showed up, did get invited to Instructional League in Arizona, and had added 3-4 miles an hour to his fastball. And all of a sudden, he's starting 96, 97, and that's coming at you sidearm, which is a tough look and really opened up some eyes there. So I think there will be plenty of competition in that bullpen. I think you've got a lot more established players. Anthony Misiewicz will be in there too, and he was probably your most consistent arm out of the pen last year. Really kind of opened some eyes, former starter who debuted as a reliever, and he's a lock for the pen this year. And I think they will at least add one more arm. I don't think it's going to be anything too flashy, but I think it will be somebody established to help as well. So I think it's going to look a lot different if everybody can stay healthy than it did last year. And that's going to help. You know, I think DePoto actually said they will lean on them early. So all the hitters get their legs under them, they're going to be looking for that pen to kind of pick up some slack.
Yeah, Shannon, a couple of things that stood out to me. One was, you know, talked about health, Mitch Haniger and what DePoto said about him. But then also, yeah, the Logan Gilbert thing. So he said, you know, he kind of threw it in there like, and just so you know, or something like that. He's the closest to actually playing. You said watching him in spring training. But, what I mean, what's the sort of time range? I mean, are we thinking coming out of spring training? I mean, when do you think that it happens that we see him up at the major league level?
Well, I think last year in spring training, I think that we were probably going to see him, barring disaster, probably in early May, if not a little bit before. So I think that I thought it was interesting because I would think that with the younger guys, they would want to get them going and then bring them up. Service time is sometimes an issue, sometimes not. I haven't seen DePoto really like to. If a guy's ready, they tend to like to bring them up. So the fact that he said that he will be allowed to compete in spring training, you know, now it's out there. And if Gilbert goes out there and lights the world on fire in spring training, I think he's going to expect to get called up. And this is, you know, it's a big arm in the system. This is the guy who's kind of next in as far as the starters go. So I would think that we would see him in the first 2 months of the season, and I'll be interested to see, you know, what he does and if he really is allowed to compete in Peoria.
And then, yeah, the Mitch Haniger thing, I'm just really excited about that. And, you know, the quote in your story, Shannon, was, you know, the easy identification is when healthy, Mitch Haniger's our best player. I'm kind of paraphrasing there. But I'm happy to hear that. And he said on his, you know, his Instagram pages, things like that, you can see that he's in good shape. And I wouldn't say I had given up on him, but boy, it seemed like that those injuries have lingered on, and just really good news to hear that about Mitch Haniger.
It is. You know that Mitch Haniger knows how to work. And even though we haven't seen him in a year, he was up in Seattle quite a bit. He was in touch. And I think they had eyes on him, just not in areas where they couldn't, at the park and whatnot. But, you know, and DePoto said, I think it was kind of lost on people how tough it is to rehab two different injuries. And if you think about it, it makes sense. They're different movements. They are different physical rehabs. They are different. You have to be careful with this and that. And these are particularly tricky ones when you have got a back and a core muscle, which you can't make a misstep with and then throw into it. It happened during the pandemic. And for a long time, he wasn't able to go to a physical therapist. He was having to do, I think, some of his physical therapy on, you know, Zoom calls with Mariners staff. And that's, wow, you know, not ideal because he was down in California. But we have seen Mitch Haniger at his best. We have seen him struggle a little bit. He struggled in 2019. You know, I'm hoping they get 2018 Mitch Haniger back, but he has had a lot of time to take care of his body. He's going to be the healthiest he's been in a long, long time. He's hitting. He does his studying. He knows what he wants to do. He has a, you know, an idea and an approach. He knows his swing. He knows his approach. So you hope that he can hit the ground running a little bit. And if he can, it's going to be a huge boost in a couple of different ways. And that, you know, the offense, I think you like what you see with the pitching. The offense, it was a little bit shaky beyond Kyle Lewis. There wasn't a lot of consistency with that offense last year. Dylan Moore stood out a little bit, but you need more in that department. And he would give them not just the numbers that he brings in, but also let's remember that Mitch was one of the guys that they held on because they wanted him to be the example for these young players that are coming up. You know, he knows how to work. He knows how to work his way through a major league season. And I think that is somebody that they would like to have around the players on top of everything else.
What do they do at second base? I know Shed Long Jr. was their guy, and you know they liked his promise, his potential, had some pop in the bat, but none of that is materialized at the big league level. So what do you think his future looks like?
You know, that was a rough one for Shed last year, and it was kind of tough because he was, if you remember, he was given the position in spring training last year. You might remember D. Gordon, his first day of spring training, saying, you know, that's not how they did it when I was coming up. You had to take that position from somewhere, someone. And he had to say that one day, and that was the end of it, and then he helped Shed. Shed was a friend of his and everything else, but Shed did not have a good spring. He did not have a good showing when he was up with the big club this year. And toward the end of when we saw him, we found out that he was dealing, you know, with the fractures in the shin. And so I have to wonder how much that was impacting him. And in the process, it appears that he has lost the position for now. I think they intend on giving Dylan Moore as many at-bats as possible at second base. I think Shed Long, if he has a good spring, can find himself a spot on the team. But as far as the everyday look at this point, I think it's going to go to Moore, who really opened eyes, who took the shutdown period and went to work on his swing and his contact rate and put up the best, I believe, the strongest offensive numbers on the team last year, OPSing 855, and just really kind of being a constant force in the lineup, as well as being able to play second base. I think ideally, because of his versatility, if you get this club to the point where they are ready to contend year in and year out, I think Dylan's versatility is something that they very much value, and you ideally would have him in a spot where he's moving around almost every day. But every time you talk to both DePoto and Service, they say that he has earned that time and that look at second base next year. So I think you see him there to start, and Shed's going to have to work his way back in there, but that's not a bad thing. That's what young players do, and Shed has that versatility as well. And Scott Service said he might even see Shed a little bit out in left field while that's unsettled. So for now, second base is going to be Dylan Moore. But you know, I think when you look to the future, that is perhaps somewhere. If you're looking to add and bring in a bigger name, that might be somewhere where you can add.
Shannon, it's good to talk baseball. We appreciate it and look forward to talking again soon.
Great to talk to you guys.
Thanks, Shannon. There's our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher. Spring training right around the corner.
She's fired up.
Yeah, should be. There's a lot to look forward to. Doesn't mean they're getting to the playoffs or they're going to challenge for the World Series this year, but I think they're going to take a big step in the right direction.
Oh, I expect the World Series, Bob.
Well, then you better be prepared to be disappointed, my friend. All right, coming up, we're going to try and pick out our favorite Seahawks offensive coordinator candidate based on quotes about their offensive approach. We'll tell you what we're talking about. Coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, we're going to go through Seahawk free agents. We did this really early in the show, and we're going to do this for those that didn't get a chance to hear it. Each day, we're going to isolate a couple of free agents. There's 24 unrestricted free agents on this roster, and then a couple with a different designation. But we'll work our way up from the lesser-known guys to the guys that everybody's wondering about, the KJs, the Carsons, people like that. Each day, we'll do a couple. So just something for Seahawks fans to look forward to, a little breakdown. Basically, we're going to determine they're staying or they're going. And none of it's personal. Just want to make that clear. These are business decisions that Dave and I are going to be making on these guys. So we're going to do that coming up in the next segment. But Maura came up with a cool idea here. We've heard a lot of names floated out there in terms of possible candidates for this offensive coordinator position with the Seahawks. And a lot of these guys aren't well-known names. Some are you're familiar with. Some you've maybe heard for the first time. What Maura is going to do is going to read quotes from these guys, not tell us who they are. We'll go through and just based on what we hear about them from what she reads, say, I kind of like that candidate number one or that candidate number three or whatever.
Oh, yes.
Figure out who they are.
It's like a dating show where you guys pick your OC.
Okay. That's right. What was it? What was it? The blind when somebody would be behind the wall there. And
and you'd ask questions.
Yes.
What was that show?
What was that? Was that Match Game?
No. I don't know. That's an older one.
Is that just
one?
The dating game? Is that
texted
what that
was? Texted into 7-10-7. Oh, yeah, Bachelor number 1, 2, and 3. And they
yeah,
asked questions.
You couldn't see
and
them.
They were,
Is that what it was, the dating game?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you could see, like, the one that comes around that's, like, stunning, and he didn't pick her, and he's like, you can, like, you oh.
See all right, well, let's make sure we get through all these.
Okay.
Here we go.
So what I'm going to do is read you quotes either from them or about them.
Okay.
Some of these guys don't have much out there. I had to scour a little bit, so some of them may be better than others. But then afterwards, I have numbers for them, so you tell me which one you want to hear more about or you're most intrigued by.
Okay.
Candidate number one. This is from him. He says, you want to build some things around what your quarterback does. What your quarterback does, their strengths, and build off of that. And that's the same with all positions. You want to put your guys in a position to be successful. Put your receivers in position for good matchups, tight ends, running backs, whatever it is. But it all obviously starts with the quarterback.
Okay.
That's all who right. Jake Heaps would be picking.
Candidate number two. And this is someone talking about this candidate. He's very creative. Almost too creative. One of the things he loves to say is there are no can't-dos in this offense. I played 18 years in the NFL, and I thought I had learned everything I could have learned about offense in football, but I learned a lot of football being around this person. It was fun. That made it really, really fun to learn new ways to do things. Just creative, creative stuff. The challenge for him sometimes is he's so much smarter than everybody else. The thing he could probably work on the most is to slow it down for the rest of us.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
Smarty pants. That's what I wrote down.
You know it all.
Smarty pants. All right, what do we got next?
Candidate number three. This is this candidate talking about how to get the run game going. It all comes within the design and flow of the game. What a runner needs to do is just run hard every time they've got the football. Run hard, finish violently, and those things will happen for you. You have to create, at times, your own yards because every play is not going to be blocked perfectly, and that's something that runners can't control. But what they can control is how violently they attack the line of scrimmage, their reads, their decision-making, and their ball placement. Those are the things that runners have control over.
I'm telling you right now, that guy's a dream come true for Dave. You hear the word violent.
I heard the word violent twice.
It's all over.
I knew it. Dave right there was just getting chills each time.
Bob, I've got written down blah, 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 violent, create, blah, blah, violent.
All right, we got two more.
All right.
Candidate number four. This is the candidate talking. Said he tells his players, if it doesn't suck, we ain't doing it. Something just kind of hit me. If it's not hard, why are we bothering with it? Why waste our time? The whole premise is we want everything we do to be hard so that when we hit Sundays, we want that day to actually feel like fun because this is not as hard as what we're doing on the practice field.
Okay.
Okay, that has to be Freddie Kitchens or who is the guy, Bobby Joe or Jim Bob Cooter? I heard the word. I heard an ain't.
Yeah.
All right.
Candidate number five. This is the candidate talking. The DNA and origin of this offense is tempo-related. So really, in the offseason, our focus was to get back to playing fast. I figured this would be Bob's favorite.
Bob likes tempo.
We want to play fast, but at the same time, we want to give the quarterback the ability to get us in a good situation. We always try to give them answers, built into the concepts that we call, and also giving him the ability, if he needs to take an extra look at it.
Okay.
Okay.
Is there one more or that's it?
That's it.
That's five.
That's five.
I like it.
You each get to pick your favorite you want to hear more about.
Okay.
Dave, you go ahead and go first.
Okay. Well, I can't have two.
Well, we can go through more, but give me who do you want to hear more about first?
Okay. Well, first I want to hear more about candidate number one, because he talked about putting people in positions to most use their talent, right? Benefit them, what they do best. That's what we want to do. I really liked that. And, of course, I liked the violent part. If I had to choose between those two, though, I'd take number one because the violence is great and everything. But all he talked about was just putting your head down and creating things and, you know, running through people.
Well, some of these guys, because of the area that they coach, I only could get, you know, more particular quotes from them. But so the guy you selected, candidate number one, is Shane Steichen, Chargers offensive coordinator.
Oh, okay.
He's 35 years old. Norv Turner gave him his first NFL job. He was an assistant at Louisville. Then a defensive assistant for the Chargers, 2011 to 2012, offensive quality control coach in Cleveland, and then offensive quality control coach for the Chargers before becoming their quarterback coach, and now their OC.
Okay. Shane Steichen.
All right.
That's my guy. Bob?
I'm not going the way you think I'm going. I think you think I'm going to go with the tempo guy.
Well, I think that you're thinking.
Which I did like. I do like hearing that. And if we pick two, that would like be my tempo. Number two. But the one I'm more curious about is number two, the almost too creative.
Yeah.
And he's got a, you know, according to the person talking about him, got to dumb it down because he's so much smarter.
By the way, person talking about him was Matt Hasselbeck.
Oh, it was Ooh. Matt Hasselbeck. That see, if I'd have known that, I might have, the only thing
I know, I didn't want to give it away. So that would be Pep Hamilton.
Oh, it is. Okay, because I wrote down smarty pants. And also what I wrote down is creative.
Yeah.
Yes.
Define creative. That's different for everybody.
Yeah.
Creative.
He said that Pep always says there's no can't-dos in this offense. That some coaches will rule things out completely based on what they have, and he doesn't believe in that.
Okay. Now, I got to know who candidate number three is.
Candidate number three is the one that emerged today, Kirby Wilson, the Raiders running back coach.
That's the finish violently, run hard, finish violently.
Raiders running back
According
coach.
To the Raiders website, during his time in the NFL, Wilson has coached four running backs who rank in the top 15 in rushing yards, Emmitt Smith, Adrian Peterson, Curtis Martin, and Edgerrin James, and two of the top 12 all-time reception leaders among running backs in Larry Centers and Keith Byers.
Okay, who's number five, my tempo guy? Who's that?
That is Tony Elliott, the Clemson offensive coordinator.
Mm. Okay. Easy to do in college.
He's an interesting one. He's got quite the backstory. When he was 9, his mother was killed in a car accident that he was in.
Oh, jeez.
And then his sister and him were separated after their father went to jail. So he says that the adversity that he's gone through always challenges him to have a plan.
Wow.
All right. So the only one we didn't isolate was number four, where they said everything should be hard during the week and practice.
He
so
said
it's
ain't.
Easy.
I'm interested to see. I don't think you're going to be surprised who that was.
Number four
I'm
is.
I'm trying to think of who we've mentioned as possibilities that is not signed to another team now. It's still out there.
Yeah.
If it doesn't suck, we ain't doing it.
And you said, obviously, Doug Peterson's not part of this.
It's not Jim Bob Cooter.
It's Adam Gase.
Oh, can you imagine, Bob, can you imagine if you had heard tempo and something and picked Adam Gase? I think that would have been maybe one of the funniest things that's ever happened.
I would have walked over
show.
To you and said, punch me in the mouth. Punch me really hard, Dave. I deserve it. But that tells you something, that neither one of us picked that comment.
That's true.
Right there.
It's true.
Blind taste test. We didn't know who that was.
That's true. You had no idea it was Gase, but you didn't. He was the one guy you guys weren't as interested in figuring out who it was.
Neither one of us drawn to his comments. He's out.
Right.
He's out.
I mean, that's the way it's going to go anyway. But you know, the guy that I really liked though was Pep Hamilton.
Yeah.
You know, going in. I mean, the quotes. You know, I don't know the creative thing. Again,
well, it's good just, to hear from Hasselbeck though. To hear the
if it's coming from Matt Hasselbeck, you know. But I still am like, when people say be creative, like, okay, what does that mean?
Yeah. You know?
Well, he said that he thought he had learned everything, and he learned new things from Pep.
Learned new stuff.
He has been around a long time, Hasselbeck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good quote. But one, two. You know, I like the violent thing. Who's the violent thing again? Was he the...
violent running. That was
Raiders.
Kirby
Raiders.
Wilson.
Yeah.
Raiders running back.
Yeah.
He also has an interesting story. Apparently, when he was with the Steelers, he was involved in a big house fire and suffered like second and third degree burns right before the AFC wildcard matchup. And I guess really like his players really... rallied around him after that, and he's pretty beloved from what I understand.
Wow. So what we learned here is we'd be happy with any of these guys except for Adam Gase.
Yeah. That's right. He's the only one.
We learned what we already knew, but now we know for sure.
We just cemented it is all. He's out. Good stuff, Mara. Good stuff.
That was great.
I like that. All right, coming up, we're going to do something new. We did this really early in the show, so unless you've been listening all day, as most people should, but we know not always possible. We're going to take a look at some Seahawk free agents each and every day, and we'll work our way from the lesser known guys up to the more well known guys. Each day we'll do a couple. So we'll get into our Seahawks free agent countdown coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wyman and Bob present the Seahawks Free Agent Countdown.
All right, let's go. Let's go.
A deeper look at the Hawks free agents and the implications of re-signing each one.
Once guys kind of earn their way with us, you know, and they become part of the spirit of how we do things, then they are always our guys. We got a little bit of a soft spot for our guys.
Now, here's Wyman and Bob.
All right, a new segment we're going to do every day until we run out of players. Seahawks have 24 unrestricted free agents, and then again, a couple that have a different designation, restricted free agent, things like that. But yeah, we'll just get into those 24 right now, and we're going to work our way from the bottom up. And by the bottom, I'm not disrespecting these guys, but guys that were maybe more role guys, they weren't, you know, the stars of the team that you're wringing your hands over whether they come back or not. But according to Field Yates, who tweeted out earlier, he said, a look at how much cap space each NFL team rolled over to 2021. From the Browns, who have the most at $30 million, over $30 million, to the Ravens, who have $586,000. The NFL will audit these amounts after calculating incentives and cap credits from this year. The final amounts will be added to each team's cap for 2021.
So, and the Seahawks had like 900?
Yeah, according to his list, Seahawks are at $956,477.
Oof.
That's not a lot of room.
No.
So
you're going to have to loosen some things up.
Yeah, so we're starting with three players here. And what we're doing is basically just saying they're staying or they're going. Like, it's not up to us what they get paid, but we'd like to see him back, or no, you can move on from this guy. All right, so let's start with one that everybody's familiar with, Delano Hill.
Delano Hill is, I think, done here. And just for reference, because somebody was asking about, you know, what kind of money, and I'm all of these guys at the bottom of the list that you just talked about, Bob, where we're doing three, maybe two a day, you know, these guys are probably minimum guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Delano Hill doesn't have the kind of performance to get much above what his credited seasons, which will be fifth. And if you're in 4 to 6 years, your minimum is about $910,000. You believe that? I mean, and
it's
your
nice living,
first
man.
Credited season, 675.
Jeez.
I mean, yeah, nobody made 675 when I was playing.
Yeah, you could be a guy you never hear of on the roster making $675,000.
Yeah, and so Delano Hill, that's around where he's going to be if they do re-sign him, which would be about $900,000. So, but, you know, just too many injuries and too many mysteries. Again, Delano Hill was a guy that came out of Michigan. They drafted him in the fourth round, I believe, third round. And then, you know, they thought maybe he could play corner, actually, coming out of Michigan. But, you know, he became a safety. But here's the thing about Delano Hill that's very strange, because a lot of people, oh, yeah, that guy's this, that, and the other. Pete Carroll thought he was really good. And, you know, he had a lot of good things to say about him. And anytime Pete talks about especially a defensive back, I'm listening, because he knows he's an expert in defensive back play. It's just that, you know, we never saw it. So I don't think since I've been around Pete, I don't think that there's ever been a bigger difference between what he has said about a player and what I have seen.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm taking Pete's word for it. So, but Delano Hill really didn't have, I mean, he has had one fumble recovery in 2018, a pass defense, a few tackles, 64 tackles, couple quarterback hits. He picked off an extra point conversion, two-point conversion in Pittsburgh when they beat him out there in 2019. But, yeah, I don't think he's here.
Yeah, he's out. I don't need to add anything to it. No. I just haven't seen anything from him, and maybe Pete saw potential that was never fully realized for various reasons. But to me, he and Tedrick Thompson were interchangeable. You got the same thing out of each one, which was not a lot of consistent good play.
And that's why I spent a little extra time on him. I mean, we got to get to DeMontre Moore and Jonathan Bullard. But, I mean, Delano Hill was just, he was kind of controversial.
Yeah.
It was just one of those things people never saw what they saw.
Yeah, so we've got him out. So now we look at defensive end DeMontre Moore, who, when we talked earlier, you really pointed it out. He's an energy guy. He's an effort. He's a defensive end. Didn't really do much in the way of playing that spot, but special teams, which we really undersell a lot, and they were really good this year. Their special teams were really, really good this year, from the punting to kicking to coverage. I mean, when they had a misstep, it was very noticeable because it just wasn't happening very often. So in you talked about him being a big part of that.
I loved him that he covered, I mean, kickoffs. He's 6'4", 265 pounds. And talked to Jason Myers, the kicker this year, about any guys you like watching run down there. And he's talking about all of his guys. Cody Barton had a good year. You know, of course, Nick Ballore was a Pro Bowler, but he said, oh, I love DeMontre Moore because he's just a huge, he's a freight train. But this guy, and here's what, he's going into his either eighth or ninth year coming up here. Doesn't matter because the minimum is about $1 million, $1,050,000. And this is a guy that fills in your roster, you know, the back end of your roster. But the way this guy plays, I want him back here. He plays hard. He hustles. And again, go back to, I thought one of the best plays that I've seen this year that I've talked about on Football 101 was it was a third and four with about 2 minutes left against Minnesota. They were on the Seattle 9-yard line, and they ran like a pitch or a reverse to Adam Thielen. And DeMontre Moore, from his right defensive end position, ran all the way to the left sidelines and just splattered Thielen and knocked him backwards. 1 yard short, set up the fourth and one, and then Benson Mayoa and Bobby Wagner and especially Cody Barton had that fourth down stop. Long story short, they go down and have the game-winning drive on 2 fourth-down conversions for Russell. That never happens if DeMontre Moore doesn't hustle his tail off on every single play. And that's why you tell guys, you hustle on every play. There was a few times where I would kind of, you know, start jogging and choke it down, and then all of a sudden the ball bounced up in the air.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, if I'd have ran hard the whole time, I would have got it. So this is what I love about DeMontre Moore. And if you're just going to do a minimum deal, that's the kind of guy I want to put on, you know, on a special team, or I want to put him up on film and say, be this guy. Run like this guy does every single time. It's awesome.
Yeah, and he was suspended, made $485,000 last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, these guys we're talking about now, you're looking at veteran minimums,
right,
bring them in here. So you talked me into him. You talked me into him because special teams were so big this year. He was a big part of that when he was available, not so much as a defensive end. But we're talking about another defensive end, a guy who we did see out there a little bit in Jonathan Bullard.
Well, and they haven't listed a defensive end, I see. He was more of an inside defensive tackle, I thought, which is, you know, a little bit different. But I saw a few good things from him. But, look, he had two tackles. I feel like those big inside, you know, space eater guys, mm-hmm. I mean, he's good and stout down inside. But, I mean, he's got 3.5 career sacks. It'll be his sixth year coming up here. And I don't want to say you can just find these guys anywhere, but, you know,
He's a guy.
You could find him anywhere.
He's a guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of good defensive tackles. There's not a huge skill set, I mean, other than – and I know that defensive line coaches, and even Pete Carroll would argue with me, but, you know, I always used to tell the big D tackles inside, just go either straight, right, or left. Yeah. That's what your job is.
Yeah, so, and he's a guy that made $910,000 this year.
Yeah.
And, again, right now, according to Field Yates, they've got just a little over that in cap space. So.
Right.
They're going to have to fill out the roster with somebody. They'll get another version of him, but I don't think he stands out to the point where they're going, okay, he's a priority of any on any level. And again, this is just business. These aren't personal attacks on anybody. So, 3 players we looked at there, 2 are going, 1 staying in DeMontre Moore.
I think we agree.
Yeah, so we'll do that each day. We'll take a look at a couple of players and sort of debate whether they stay or whether they go. So, coming up, we'll talk more football. The professor, John Clayton, will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.